Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 3 of the Faculty Room Podcast. I am one half of your dynamic duo, Mike Azzalina, joined by none other than
Matthew Rogers. Good evening, Mike.
Hey, it's good to be back, man. I want to just turn right to you immediately, because the reason that we took a little bit of a layoff was because you were doing something really special and impactful for your community and your school and district. So I want you to talk to us about that and what that was like for you.
Absolutely. So a little background about my school district. I know I've talked to you guys a little bit about it before. So we are a rural district set. The way I explain it is, if you're going along the main line from Philadelphia, you hit Westchester, Downingtown, Coatesville, some farmland, and then you hit Lancaster City. So we are the farmland in between the outlets and Coatesville. So a pretty cool kind of community that doesn't necessarily have a central point besides the Gap clock tower, but an incredible community that has just kind of risen through the support of a unification of the school district, agreeing to sit down at the table with the local churches and the local nonprofit known as The Factory. So some incredible things. I know they've been together and working together for many years, but pretty dynamic when you put the school and the churches in one group. And about, I'd say, 6 or 7 years ago, they sat down trying to figure out the best thing to do for kids and for families in the community, and they established this thing called the Together Initiative, which is just amazing. Everyone kind of puts their funds and efforts and energy into the single cause of helping the families of Pequay Valley. And we've been given the opportunity through a program called the Bridges Out of Poverty from the AHA process to go to and utilize their program to just make some amazing changes in the Pequay Valley area. So they established a kind of a committee known as the Together Initiative, and they happen to be a bunch of bike riders. So for the last few years, they've been riding their bikes to the national convention. So the first one that they really did a lot of publicity for was riding from Lancaster down to Nashville, which was wildly a 24-hour ride. They rode overnight, never stopping, which is just crazy dangerous. The drivers were always driving. So the follow-up year was the first year I did it. We went out to Cincinnati, and everyone kind of rotated through their portion. So we ended up riding about 160 of the 800-ish miles. The following year, we rode down to Florida, Orlando, Florida. So we covered about 315 miles. Luckily, it was a lot of flat miles as opposed to Cincinnati. Last year, I took off, but this most recent trip was down to Atlanta, Georgia. And pretty cool stuff. We ended up, most importantly, raising about almost $30,000 in charity for the local community. What's pretty amazing about that is it goes directly to the families and the kids that I work with every single day. But so each group rode about 250 miles, a little bit shy of that. We were supposed to go along the coastline, and we trained for the coastline, I'll put it that way. But thanks to Hurricane Florence, we ended up going along the Appalachian Mountains, which made our trip a little bit more challenging. So I apologize for the little break in podcasting, but I've been trying to recover and get back to normalcy. So we're finally there. We're finally back.
You know, but totally worth it, Matt, because when you sit there and say that amount of money and what that can do for the community surrounding you, it's such a special feeling, I'm sure. And you know, I was super proud as a good friend of yours that you do that every year, because I think it's so impactful for not just your community, but for your students to see you in that light, and not just the guy who stands in front of them every day as their teacher, but someone who is human and who cares and wants to do more. And I think that's something so often that gets lost in translation with kids. when they look at their teachers in a different light. And that's one of the things we wanted to talk about tonight. So this is the perfect way for us to start this show as we look at the way that our students think of us when they see us outside that classroom. So Matt, when you see a kid outside of your classroom, outside of your school, and they look at you in a different way, describe that moment.
Well, it's wild. So this could be as simple as I was teaching for this bike ride, left for about 10 minutes, went, got in my cycling gear. I come back and it was almost that puppy dog reaction of like you walk out of the room and you walk back in and the dog is ecstatic to see you. My kids were thrilled because they didn't see me in my traditional view, and it was like I was a rock star. So while dangerous, riding along all the little kids high-fiving and them cheering, it's amazing. And so in addition to that, the idea of going and seeing kids outside of your classroom, I think the most entertaining thing is that kids honestly believe that you live, breathe, sleep school, and you actually live at school. Like I don't think they realize you have families and houses and responsibilities outside of it unless you actually show them or kind of bring them into that world. So I know my wife does an incredible job of being in contact with parents to go see dance recitals and sporting events and special ceremonies whenever she can. And we had the opportunity, for instance, when we got back from Atlanta, to go to a boys and a girls soccer match. So just getting to be able to see your kids, and the parents are incredibly appreciative of it too, that when you come back that next Monday or Tuesday or whenever you come back, they realize that you just went the extra mile. And when we talked about relationships so heavily, that is such a strong anchor that really solidifies the base relationship, especially early on in the school year.
Yeah, I think what's really important is for teachers to know that it's okay to put yourself out there and to take that extra step and be that superhero that goes beyond those four walls of the classroom. You know, you said you've gone to sporting events, your wife has gone to baptism or sorry, because I'm getting somewhere with that and it was in my head, to recitals and things of that nature. I've been to first Holy Communions for kids.
Really?
That I taught. Yeah.
Awesome.
Families have invited me to go to the first Holy Communion and I've gone because it's something that is meaningful to the student and it's something that is meaningful to the family and it's something that they won't forget. And the relationship piece that you start to build in the classroom can appropriately be taken to their lives. You know, families love when you show up at their events outside of school. They think that just builds that connection. I used to set up a movie night where families would come to the movies twice each year. Families would come to the movies. They'd meet me there. Obviously, you know, they would pay their way, but it was a night to spend with myself, you know, in the theater. It was something we could bond over on Monday, something we could talk about. And it was just something for us, for our classroom. Yeah. So just, you know, and setting that example and that tone, you know, you did the bike rides. You do so many things outside of school for your kids, with your kids, so that they see you in a different way. I was in that dance show that raised money for our school district.
Yeah, talk about that.
Two-time champ, baby.
I know you are. Proud of you.
No, but it was to raise money for our grant foundation, for our school district's education foundation. So it poured money into the foundation and we went out, we advertised ourselves as a duo. Every school had two representatives. So there was a fundraising champion and then there was a dancing champion and the whole district would come to the high school and watch the show while nine duos of teachers would compete in this dance competition. So it was Dancing with the Streaks, of full spin-off of Dancing with the Stars, but for the kids to come and see that night and see you in that light, it was almost like you said, like a starstruck moment. Like, I wasn't in my shirt and tie. I was in jeans and a t-shirt, and I was on stage dancing in front of a couple thousand people in an auditorium. And it was just stepping out of a comfort zone to let the kids see that, one, it's okay to step out of a comfort zone, but two, I do have a different side to me, and I'm not just a robot who stands in front of you.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be embarrassing inducing. I don't know if I feel comfortable to do dancing in front of all those people, but between roller skating gigs, I will say, 6-time champion in the roller skating race. That's what I bring to the table. Beating all the dads that are significantly older than I, well, used to be significantly older. Now I'm kind of even with a lot of the dads in my my classrooms. But it's honestly the truth. We've done like McDonald's serving food and Rita's and basketball with the Harlem Wizards. I know you've had that opportunity too. It's something that even if you have, I've had kids that challenge me in class. And the amount of pride that they have when they see their teacher, their fourth grade teacher, their third grade teacher, their assistant principal, their art teacher, their counselor representing them and having special interest in them when they could have interest in the whole school, it's just amazing. So I was, for instance, greeted when I came back with a huge sign, and every single kid's first words were, "We're so glad you're back. How was the trip? We missed you." Those type things that a month and a half into school, I've just got such a group of kids that are just so proud to be in my room, which leads right into the idea of maintaining just an amazing classroom culture.
Right. And I think, you know, setting that tone as someone who cares, as someone who is out there for you, is supportive of you both inside and outside of the classroom, helps to, you know, set, as I said, that specific tone of what you're looking for when you're in the classroom. You build that relationship with the kids, and they're going to go the extra mile for you. They see you go the extra mile for them. They want to do the same for you. It doesn't matter how old they are. They feel when you care. They know when you care. They know when you're real. And when we talk about setting the tone, we're talking about the rules, the expectations. The example you set at the beginning, at the forefront, is the one that they're going to replicate. So Matt, let's just take some time here and talk about the ways that when you step into the classroom, and we had such a great conversation with Ken last week around setting those expectations at the forefront. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the way that you like to do that, and why that way works for you.
So I think the best thing to do when it comes to expectations is make them sustainable and simple. The hardest thing, I know, we'll all come across groups that are on the verge of unruly, that it's just they seem to challenge you. And too often do I think, for instance, I'm working with someone right now who's an amazing teacher, and hopefully she doesn't mind me bringing this up. But her first year, she taught with a group of kids, and they're great kids. She looped with that group in her second year of teaching and struggled to identify that she had great tactics, but she had grown comfortable in the eyes of the kids. And so just reinforcing simple, sustainable tactics is incredibly important. There was not much she was going to be able to do as an early teacher to establish her kind of lofty theoretical behavior modifications. So when it comes down to what I do in my classroom, I have certain things, and everyone can have their own. We have this thing called Take Five. I say Take Five, or I put my five fingers up, and they know that they need to be seated. Their bottoms in a chair or on the ground, their hands folded, their mouths closed, and their eyes on me. It's very simple, but I don't even have to communicate verbally for them to get the message. And the best part about it is the kids know that regardless of how loud or unruly or just kind of chaotic the room is, within 10 seconds, they are policing each other to make sure they're back in track. And other things, simple, like we have a line leader in classroom jobs. The line leader is able to pick in our elementary school. Every hallway has 1 foot by 1 foot tiles. They can choose one tile to stand in, and the kids have to line up exactly in one tile behind them. And they follow in line, and I can walk down the hallway and stare at their feet, and they immediately know what they need to do to get back to it. These are not crazy behavior management of I'm handing out tickets and buying rewards and doing all sorts of things. It's more so just we're going to pause and we're going to wait until we're back on track. My biggest gift that I give kids is I give them two pencils. And if I see a pencil on the floor, I collect it. I put it on my kind of stash of pencils, and they're down to one pencil. And if they devalue or it happens, they chew on them or lose them somewhere, then they're down to zero pencils and they need to either earn them back. And so the best thing that they do is they work to earn pencils back. Now, do I ever have kids not with pencils? No. But what do? They give me a shoe, so I have collateral over them. So they want their shoe back at the end of the day. I get my pencil back. And something simple as that, it's kind of silly. It's kind of fun. Hopefully they're wearing clean socks. That makes a big deal in the classroom. But simple and sustainable. You know my rules. What do I get for Christmas gifts? Big stacks of pencils. It's awesome. That's not expensive. It's not mind-blowing, but it makes the little things important. And those are the things that valuing your stuff, valuing your space, and just kind of your time, we can get right back onto track very quickly because they know those expectations.
Yeah, I when I was teaching, when I was in the classroom, my three main expectations that I would build alongside of them but sort of guide them toward was to be respectful to one another and one another's things and to ourselves. That was always number one. To be responsible in the things that you need, your supplies, other supplies, and our building, and to always show a growth mindset. Those were my three expectations. I did not care if you made a mistake. What I cared about was whether or not you were going to be resilient enough to bounce back from that mistake. And it may sound like a lot for me to ask second graders to do that, but those were my three expectations that I had from day one. Sorry, what were you going to ask me?
That was exactly what I was going to ask. Do you feel like that was appropriate for second grade?
Yeah.
Because it's even from the fourth grade, I kind of see them as mini adults. They're not anywhere close to adults, but we talk about the kind of young adult mindset of what we're working towards, because mm-hmm. they're at that almost growing stage. Some of them are kind of growing before you throughout the school year. So you can kind of see, hey, you're heading down the hallway, the fifth grade, the sixth grade mentality that you really have to boost yourself up to. Mm-hmm. How does that necessarily work, the responsibility with a second grader? Because they're, what, 7, 8 mm-hmm. years old?
So I want to clarify, are you asking me about all three of those expectations or simply the growth mindset?
How much work do you put into making sure they understand how important they are and what they really look like in your classroom?
So it's really explicit for 7 year olds when they come in. The mindset that they're only first grade still has to be present. For me, it was really explicit, spending a lot of time on each of those characteristics that I was looking for. What does being respectful look like here in this classroom, in the hallways? What does it sound like when we leave this classroom? We walk by 5 other classrooms on the way to lunch. So what does being respectful sound like when we're walking in the hallway on the way to lunch? We know we're excited about lunch, but what does that sound like? And holding them accountable. look, my friends, I understand it is our first day of school. I understand that it's our 20th day of school, but the expectation remains the same. If you're unable to walk in the hallways the way that we have practiced and the way that we have talked about in order to be respectful, then we will continue to practice that as a skill, as a skill to be able to be respectful. Because when you think about it, it is an expectation as you get older. You know, you and I as adults, we are expected to be respectful when we're walking amongst others doing their jobs. And that's the way I described it to them. I said often that I love to joke around and have fun when I was teaching, but I did hold my students accountable to that level that I wanted them to perform at, regardless of their age, because the growth came. And it wasn't that... it wasn't that if they flubbed up a couple of times that, you know, I was going to come down on them. It comes back to that whole culture in the classroom of, look, this is what we're aiming for, and we missed the mark today. It doesn't mean we can't get there, but what do you need for me to help you get there? What is it that you need for me to help you to see that this is how we're going to act when we're in the classroom? The simplicity of what you talked about in your take five, I love that. I did something called slant when I needed all of them back and engaged again. And it is pretty common term out there right now. It just stands for sit up, listen, ask, answer questions, nod your head, and track the teacher. So when I saw some students that had the head down on the desk, all I would have to do is say slant, and every single one of them would sit back up again, and they'd start doing the whole process. When I needed attention in the room or something that I forgot to give a direction, or I just needed their attention to come back to task or come back to their desks or start to transition to a new activity, I always did something that is kind of silly. If you've ever heard an art teacher do Mona and everybody yells Lisa, I did Chase and everybody in my classroom yelled Utley, because it related directly to something that I was passionate about, something that we could connect on. And the kids would always look at me on the first day like, what? But then by the end of the year, they'd be yelling to each other, Chase, and everybody would respond Utley, because you have so many classroom leaders at that point. So yeah, keeping it simple, but not letting go of the expectation just based on the age group. And I that question was very fair, Matt, and something that I think some people do let slide by, because they'll think, well, they're in first grade. Yeah, they are. And we have to remember that in a lot of ways. But that doesn't mean we can't hold them accountable and we can't set expectations and support them to meet the expectation. That's the biggest piece. Not just leaving them to flounder, but really support them to reach those expectations, because the follow-through is the most important. If you spend a lot of time on it at the forefront, if you're proactive in setting these expectations and really holding kids accountable, then by month two, you're going to be cruising.
And I think, I mean, a few things that you bring up that are very relevant. So we do the snap, crackle, the yell, pop, or we do a clapping rhythm that is just clearly everyone's joining in to participate in it. And I think that's something that just matches. It's disruptive enough to what's going on, and I don't mean disruptive in a negative way, but hey, if your nose is in a book or you're working on an activity or even in a conversation, it's disruptive enough to what you're doing to know, all right, there's obviously something done. I need to move into the next thing. The one thing I wanted to talk about, I know we wanted to kind of reflect on Ken a little bit, is I think that it's really impressive the tone set on day one. I know we talked about what happens before day one, but I think it's impressive that the amount of vulnerability that he shows in a worrisome way. Vulnerable might not be a great way to put it, because he's not going to lose control of his class, but he is putting so much kind of power into the kids' hands that I have to imagine. I've had a few conversations with people post podcast about it, that it's amazing that he's comfortable to do it, but I could never do it myself. And I I kind of want to unpack that, because you don't have to do it exactly like that. I can't imagine parents' faces walking into an empty classroom or kids walking into desk pile in the middle of the room. But there's some components of that that absolutely display the same benefit with not as radical of an experience. So you take that one step towards it, and you show that vulnerability and giving up that control, which sets a tone for the rest of the year that, hey, if you want to play ball, if we're going to have an amazing year together, I was going to bring up how competitive I make my classroom. Now, we don't compete against the other fourth grade classrooms, but when we go to special, we talk about being the best class that specialist sees, because they see every single elementary child in the entire school district. I just think that those type activities where you take a chance, whether it's Ken's method or kind of how we're talking about tonight, and you take opportunities even through unification of box top competitions, that's how we pull kids together to almost have not like a mob homeroom pride, but I'm going to take being in this room serious, and I'm going to follow everything to the best of my ability.
Yeah, I think there are different extremes to it. Ken's is definitely one end of that spectrum. Really putting it all out on the table and letting the kids take the full ownership, but pride in that setting. That's their environment. That's going to be their place. That's going to be, if you come to our home, these are our expectations. These are, you know, they're really setting the tone. And you can do that with the smallest of items. Like I said to you, one of my passions as a classroom teacher was circles and restorative practice. Our circle time was sacred to us. If people were going to come in, they were invited by my class. Like, our kids would write them letters inviting them to come to a circle, because that was sacred to us. It was something that was special to us. It was a place where we not only got to know each other and built our relationships, but it was a place where we made decisions as a class, and where we talked about if our community was harmed, we talked about it and we fixed it and we repaired the relationships within that. So if someone was going to join us, even if it was the principal of the school, they were getting a written invitation that they could join us. Awesome. Otherwise, that door was closed and it was our time. But it was something that we owned in that classroom. And it was important. It was important to me, and it was important to my 25 kids every year. And I think that, you know, that was a place for us to carry out those pieces and those expectations that we talked about. But it was also vulnerable. There was also a vulnerability to that. And it made us proud to be a part of that. It made me proud to be a part of their world in that way. And it made them proud to be a part of each other's world. They were very protective of one another. We had our bumps in the road like any family has. But ultimately, they took pride in being there for one another. So when we did have those competitions like the Penny Wars, and when we did go to gym class, they were holding each other accountable because they wanted to win. They wanted to be the best class that Mrs. Farr saw all week. That's what mattered to them. And I think, Matt, you hit it on the nose. It's you set those expectations. They buy into those expectations. You give them ownership of those expectations of that classroom, and they're going to rise to the occasion.
Absolutely. I think the kids, I always go back to, this is the one time they get to do fourth grade. This is the one time they get to do second grade. And I can teach the best lesson possible on, right now we're talking about weather. I can teach the best lesson, and hopefully a lesson that they will utilize to choose how they're going to dress themselves for the rest of their life. Okay, so that can be beneficial. But these interactions and these values and people's kind of hearts and minds and having these conversations is just the character development that goes well beyond what any traditional lesson will do. I guess the thing I want to ask you about is I've had some incredibly vulnerable times with my kids, and nothing crazy. My parents have had some trouble along the way. I didn't necessarily dive deep into that. I've had animals pass away that they were familiar with because they were part of our classroom. I guess my question to you is, how vulnerable do you get with your kids? How much do they know about you, and what do you kind of shield them from? Because I think that balance of how much do you know about Mr. A is important.
You know, man, it's funny. I feel like those kids probably knew me as well as most people that I'm close with in my life. Yeah, you shield them from a lot of the personal things that happen on a day-to-day. They knew a lot about my wife. They knew a lot about our pets. They knew a lot about my immediate family, because a lot of what I taught, I tried to make real for them and relatable to them. Just, you know, because that's the way that we connect and the way they connect to material. They knew about my hobbies. They knew about the things that I was passionate, and of which I was passionate, like sports. You know, I think it was natural, and it will feel natural for a lot of you listening to know where that line is. And, you know, when kids ask questions, it's okay to just say to them, you know, that's something that I choose. I can think of it right now, the election, the most recent election. We had to have a sit down circle about it, because I had students coming in really upset about what was going on. And I know you're thinking, man, they were in second grade, but they listen to their parents. They hear what their parents are saying.
They're thrilled about it. And how do they, they are very much related to what their parents' view of philosophy was.
And, you know, they came in and they were fired up, and they looked at me and they said, who'd you vote for? And I said, guys, that's not something I'm willing to share. I said, I'm happy to listen to you and your concerns and talk to you and help you to understand what happened. And, you know, we can have those conversations, but that's something that I'm going to keep to myself. And it's totally fair and to be transparent with them in that way. And they listen. But I think, you know, what's important is that they know you. And they know the things that you're passionate about and the things that you care about, because those are the things that they connect to the most. You'll know where to draw the line. You know, I think that's the key, is just knowing where that line is drawn and the things that they don't need to know about you. But it is crucial for them to know those things that make you who you are.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's the amazing thing. Like I said, I had a cat that passed away, and the next day I had 3 cards with like thank you messages, and those aren't asked for. Those are just genuinely created from the heart of kids, because they care about you. And that's just such a powerful thing that I always have to pause and realize, wow, they genuinely care about me, and I know that I care so much about these kids. And it's not because I'm assigned to them, but they are my family, and I'm hoping that they feel that way. If I am the only safe person that they may interact with in a day, the only person that will listen to them in a day, that I want to be that best person for them. And
you know,
go ahead.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned pet. You know, my family's dog Tugger was always a huge part of my classroom. We did vocabulary stories about Tugger every single unit, and I would write these stories with a vocabulary buried inside of it in context for them, and they would pull it and create their own stories about Tugger. And we had a stuffed Tugger in the classroom that would go home on the weekends that they would write about. And there was like a Adventures of Tugger book that I gave to them at the end of the year based on all of their writing. And one of the best things that has happened to me in my career is the connection that I've just made, the reconnection I've just made. The 2012-2013 school year was the year that I was about to be married, and that was fun. The kids loved hearing stories about Mr. A going food tasting and all that nonsense. But most recently, I'm working at our school with somebody who does mindfulness with our students, and she's wonderful. She does a wonderful job with our students, and she comes in and she does mindfulness projects with them and really helps them to be mindful of themselves and of others around them. And, you know, when I first saw her, I was like, oh man, no way. I taught her son. And about 2 weeks ago, she brought him to the school. And now, mind you, we're talking 5 years ago at this point. And the first thing he said to me was, "How's Tugger?"
Oh.
It's the first thing that he said to me. And then the next time she came in, she brought in his Adventures of Tugger book and all of the Tugger stories that I had written for that class. And they remember those things and they don't let go of them. He's in seventh grade and he still has the exact same booklet that it was in, and it sits in his room on his desk because of, you know what I mean? Those connections that you're talking about, it matters.
It absolutely does. Now I want to kind of shift gears because I know we have had the fortune of having amazing kids. And I'll also say that I think that we're at an advantage at the elementary level being two gentlemen with low, powerful voices, kids that may not always have the best male role models. So we serve an important role in the classroom and in the school community. But there's definitely components of kids have baggage just like we do. And coming into school every day, I know you see it every single day, and I see it every single day in totally different causes. But kids have troubles, and they have troubles that can't be downplayed. And while Tugger books will work for 95% of kids, you're still going to have some kids that really struggle. And one of the things that I'm really excited about, not to jump the gun, but we're hoping next podcast to have just an incredible guest on, which you can kind of talk about a little bit more. But the whole goal is these ploys, these tricks, these games, these different kind of competitive nature work incredibly well to set a classroom expectation. But what do you do when you have kids that need more? How do you set the tone for kids that I'm going to give that not necessarily equal attention, but appropriate attention to kids? Not necessarily equal rewards, but appropriate awards and rewards to kids. So you want to talk about kind of our transition of where we're heading?
Yeah, you know, every teacher has students that, you know, needle them a little bit here and there, yeah. For lack of a better term. You know, but every student has a story. Every student has there's something that's happening that's causing the behaviors that you're seeing. And sometimes we tell ourselves a story, Matt. Like, you know, this kid just wants to be disrespectful, and we tell ourselves that story. And once we start telling ourselves that story, we're going to write our own ending. We're going to create our own tale of how this student got to this place. And it's important for us that when the action happens, when the first act happens, before we start telling ourselves a story and start reacting and letting our the wrong part of our brain take over this situation, it's important for us to stop and figure out what really happened. And I can give you the perfect example of a time I did not do that. You know, I had a student who was constantly falling asleep in my classroom, and I just started to take it personally. He's bored. He doesn't want to be in here. So, you know, I finally tapped him one day and I said, if you don't want to be in the classroom, then you just got to tell me, because I'll find somewhere else for you to be. It was frustrating. I was having difficulty really understanding, and I reflected on it later and I was like, that was probably the wrong thing to say. I'm going to try again tomorrow and just see what happens. So the next day, same thing. And I tapped him on the shoulder, and instead of going to that that bad place in my brain and tell myself a story that I didn't want to be in there. I just said, hey man, what's going on? What's happening? You know, let's talk about it. And sure enough, he told me he wasn't sleeping at home. He was sleeping in a hotel, on a pull out cot with his two brothers. And you know, they were having a situation, Matt, and I overlooked that. I told myself a story and thought that this kid was just bored in my class. So a lot of times those challenging behaviors that persist are because of things that are hidden that we're not really understanding. Yeah, we're going to have students who do have other issues that cause those behaviors. But in most cases in our general ed classrooms, Matt, we're going to see kids who are having a struggle because of some sort of trauma, whether it be a smaller trauma or a larger trauma. And I think it's just about not telling ourselves the story. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's the key. And the hard line that we play is, even though they have the story, and us obviously not trying to make it a self-fulfilling prophecy for them, is making sure to play that line of, hey, bud, I know you got some challenge. You got to deal with stuff that I could not imagine going through. But honestly, we need to figure out a way that I can make you as productive in class as possible. And that balance of being a humanitarian but also an instructor is a difficult battle. And to be honest, the instruction is not the most important in that conversation. It's getting you fed, getting you warm, getting your basic needs met. But on the flip side, it's how can I give you the best instruction possible so that you don't create that for yourself in the future?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. And when we cross paths with these students, it's crucial for us to find the best ways to support them and make the connections with them right off the bat. You know, I often say to teachers, I'd rather not know the behaviors. Tell me about the academics when they come in, but let them start with a clean slate for me. You know, if there's some sort of plan that comes with them, if there's an IEP that I need to study, that's different. But if you just had a hard time handling the behaviors in the classroom, I'm going to wipe my hands. I'd rather just start with a clean slate because that's what the student needs. They need a clean slate. So it's important for me not to have predetermined judgment of what I'm going to see in my classroom, because I might not. I might see something totally different. But, you know, what we're really excited about is talking about building those relationships and connecting with the kids that may be the most difficult kids to connect with. Next week, we're going to bring on my cousin, my like older sister, Beth Small, who works for the International Institute of Restorative Practices. She's an international trainer. She's one of their professors at their grad level. She has really been restorative her entire life, from the time she was my babysitter until now. I'm really excited to have her come on and talk us through how to build those relationships from the get-go, even with our most difficult students, and how when those students tend to break down the walls of the community we've built, how we rebuild those walls and how we don't allow students to turn against that one student who may be having a tough time, and how we help those students to see the ways that they can support students who may be struggling. So really excited to have her, because she's an expert in her field, and she's someone who's going to take this conversation right now and make 1,000 more times sense of it than you and I could ever dream of making it.
And I think one of the things that I'm excited kind of to whet the palate is, I want to talk about next week really the role of the teacher, the role of the admin, and really the role of the advisor, and using Beth as the role of the advisor, an outside source of information. Because as you deal with behavior issues, kind of like we create a story for the kid, we also create the internal struggle for ourselves asking for help. So I want to dive into that because it's uncomfortable to go to your higher ups and your supervisors. So we won't necessarily unpack that now, but kind of your suggestion and Beth's suggestion of how do you get the support you need? Because I think that's something that we need to recognize is as long as it's for the kids, ask away. Get the support you can. The only thing that you're doing wrong is not. So we'll kind of talk about that more next week. But I think having Beth on, just having a few interactions with her, she is an incredible resource, an incredible person to begin with, but just an incredible resource to talk about adding to that classroom culture. So instead of 95% buy-in, you have 100% buy-in and just make an incredible classroom experience.
Yeah, Matt, I think listeners will be really excited to hear from her. She said to me the other day, she and I were together, we were watching the Eagles game, and she said to me, you know, I really hope that I live up to your billing. And I laughed at her. I said, Beth, you're going to be talking to two guys who are, we literally just sit down and we shoot it for about 40 minutes. So anything you say is going to sound smarter than anything we could ever say, in essence. And, you know, we will get into a lot with her next week. But before we wrap up, anything exciting this weekend, Matt? Anything you're looking forward to on the long weekend?
Oh, so it's Columbus Day weekend. Is that right?
Yes.
So we have a professional development tomorrow, which should go swimmingly. And then my wife and I are taking a trip down to Wilmington, North Carolina to celebrate a friend's wedding. And then coming back on Monday, just in time to be bright and early on Tuesday morning. So looking forward to the wedding, not looking forward to DC traffic on the middle of a Friday afternoon. So what do you have going?
It's so true.
It's terrible.
So back in school tomorrow, I was out today at a training, and you know, I love learning and I love continuing to grow as a professional, but I miss being in school around the kids. It drives me bonkers when I'm not there. I think about them all day, so I can't wait to get back in there. Saturday, Andrea and I are going to be spending a lot of time unpacking our lives
in the new house that I still have yet to see. Just put it out there. You've been in there a while.
Well, we're gonna be finally settled in. It feels like after this weekend, we're really excited. So that's gonna be our big thing on Saturday and most of the day on Sunday. And then I'm back at school on Monday, just in the office. So, but really excited to get some stuff done around the house is really where I'm heading, Matt.
Yeah, before we wrap up, I want you to just reflect on, you had a tweet earlier today that I thought was perfect related to the breakfast. So I don't know if you want to kind of wrap up with that.
Yeah. Before we go, real quickly, just so that we're all on the same page and people can get in touch with us online, I am at A Price SDOL, at A Price SDOL on Twitter. And this is what I tweeted out today. I normally stand at the front door for breakfast every day to greet students. Wasn't in the building to do that today. When I walked around the classrooms later, it was eye-opening how much that morning moment means to students. In quotes, Mr. A, where were you at breakfast today? I love that. I would say about 30 kids said that to me. We usually get upwards of 100 to 200 kids to breakfast during our mornings. And, you know, 30 kids as I walked through the building today said, you know, Mr. A, I missed you at breakfast. Where were you? You weren't at the door today. That sort of thing, you know, that consistency of just standing there every morning and shaking every kid's hands and looking them in the eye and complimenting something about them, you know, to know that they miss that moment, really tells how meaningful it is. And it's meaningful to me too. I miss doing that when I'm not down there because I'm at a meeting or something of that nature. It's really difficult for me to not be there for them in the morning. And it, cause I love that moment. I love seeing every one of them as they walk in and say something silly to them. Like, you know, happy, or I hope you have a wacky, wonderful Wednesday, or miraculous, marvelous Monday, or I'm so happy to see you. Look at those shoes. Do you need help tying them? Like, anything that just will, you know, get their day started in a positive manner is a perfect start to my day, and hopefully a perfect start to theirs.
So you may not have a morning meeting anymore, but it's still, you make an impact first thing, and that leads to success the rest of the day. So just thought, I think that's a perfect way to kind of end today. Feel free to reach out. As always, you heard Mike, A. Price, S-D-O-L for Twitter. Mine is EdTechNeighbor, and you can also follow pod_faculty room. So look forward to bringing you this, and cannot wait till next week to bring Beth on. And as Mike has said, make us look real bad, but give us some pretty awesome strategies. So
yeah, man. Hey, for Faculty Room Podcast, I'm Mike Azzalina.
I'm Matt Rogers. Episode 3.
It's in the books.
That's right.
Have a good night, guys.